And her question was, what's the point of a CFT meeting, question mark? Should we trust DCFS during a CTF meeting? Right now, Cynthia, from our Facebook Live group, April Lynn asked a question about CFT meetings. And her question was, what's the point of a CFT meeting, question mark? Should we trust DCFS during a CTF meeting? Well, April, you know, I'm one of those guys that's really on this issue a pessimist. A CFT meeting is where you go and you meet with the social workers. Generally, there are no attorneys involved. And generally, in the meeting, there may be two, three, four DCFS social workers. There's also a DCFS, what they call facilitator, who runs the meeting, who's just a DCFS social worker. So, you know, the point of the CFT meeting in general is for you and the social workers to get on the same page so that you can work cooperatively together to solve the problem that may have, you know, broken up your family so that they can help you bring the family back together. Now, that's what I said in theory. Now, the problem is that during these CFT meetings, things that you say, they're used against you, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at it as if it is a meeting for you to come there without your lawyer and for them to question you and get all the evidence to use against you. Now, here's one of the biggest problems with those meetings. They're not recorded. So, you know, sometimes a social worker will report that you said ABC at the meeting, and that's not what you said at all. You know, you said XYZ, or you said CDE. So there's a little, you know, twist on the facts sometimes. Maybe it's a misunderstanding. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's an intentional misreporting to the court what you said at the CFT meeting. So I advise all of my clients, don't participate in the CFT meeting unless your attorney is present. Now, I'm not telling you don't do the meeting. I'm saying don't do the meeting unless your attorney is present. And a lot of times, social workers will tell you, oh, Mr. Davis isn't allowed into the meeting. That's not true. It's not true at all. As a matter of fact,
that is what my social workers told me, was that you were not allowed at my CFT meeting.
You know, I had a civil rights lawsuit against the county and a social worker, a couple of social workers, and one of the things that we alleged as a violation of your civil rights was them not allowing your attorney to be present during a meeting between you and a governmental agent. And I remember speaking to the opposing attorney about it, and she was very concerned about that. The case ended up settling, so we never went to court. We never, you know, got a dispositive answer from a judge and jury about whether you are entitled to have an attorney whenever you meet with governmental agents. It's just my position that if you're meeting with a governmental agent, like a social worker, that you should be able to have an attorney present. Or, you know, you don't want to participate in the meeting. That's just my general. Now, there are a lot of attorneys that disagree with me, all right? And I'm not saying that they're wrong and I'm right. That's just what I do after almost 35 years as a lawyer. Am I ever wrong? Yes, I am. But that's my general feeling and my general advice. Now, have I ever sent a client to a CFT meeting without me? Yes, I have. There are certain situations where I might want to do that and might find it advantageous. I'll give you an example. Recently, I had a case in Northern California, and, you know, I was going with this strategy about not having my client not communicate with the social worker unless I was on the phone or in person. Well, something happened in the case that went to our advantage. And the social worker texts my client, hey, I'm going to give you unmonitored visits and overnight visits. And up to this point, she had, you know, just monitored once or twice a week. But I want to meet with you to go over some of the ground rules. So my client called me, should I meet with her? And the answer was yes, because in this particular situation, after reading the text messages, I got the feeling that this would benefit my client. My client went to the meeting. He was very nice, very cooperative, of course. I had, you know, coached her on how to, you know, deal with this social worker. And then, you know, a couple months later, maybe about a month later, the social worker recommended the children be returned to my client. But I want to meet with you first. My client calls me, hey, should I meet with the social worker? She's saying she wants to give me the kids back. Well, absolutely. Everything had gone fine. We had built some trust and rapport with this social worker. She goes to the meeting and, you know, and within a couple of days, they walk the matter on and they return the child or children to her for what's called a trial visit. And, you know, everyone lived happily ever after. So I'm not saying don't ever meet with the social worker at one of these CFT meetings, April. It's, you know, a case-by-case basis. My general, you know, advice, unless I know some of the specifics, is don't go without your lawyer. Okay, April, I hope that answers your question. Cynthia, did you have any comments?
No, I agree with everything that you said.
What was the story you said that happened to you?
When I had a CFT meeting, there was social worker, a few of them, like you said, and I had a couple CFT meetings. The first one I had, my therapist was actually involved, and that was very helpful because he was most definitely on my side, and so that benefited me. But then the second one, when I had you as my attorney, they had told me that no attorneys were allowed in the meeting and that they were going to cancel it. And then they set me up and had me come for a, I don't even remember what else it was, but it was something that they told me I needed to come to for my kids, and it was a CLP meeting.
Did the CLP?
It was a setup.
What do you mean it was a setup?
It was not labeled or identified as a CFT meeting before I got there. And when I got there, there were two social workers, my entire family, which happened to be the one that took my kids. The supervisor was there running the CFT. And as you mentioned, they don't take notes. They don't take minutes. And there were two huge whiteboards where they sat there and talked negatively about me the entire time. That was the entire meeting, the purpose of it.
Hey, Cynthia, we have Tanya back from Texas. She had one more question. Tanya, you there? You had one more question for
us? Yes, I'm here.
What was your question?
Okay, I'm active on Facebook. There's a lot of different anti-CPS groups on here, and there was this one young lady who recommended this is an Indian and it's the Indian it's an organization where, you know, if you have Indian ancestry, they will help you as far as trying to receive the children back from CPS.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to them, and I had to specifically know which tribe that my family is, you know, I have a lineage with, and I was told I have a lot of Indian ancestry. But I wanted to ask you, is this correct information?
Yes.
Regarding, you know.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
If you have American Indian ancestry, you need to find the tribe or tribes that you may be a part of, and you must notify your social worker in writing. Because once that is done, some special federal laws kick in called the Indian Child Welfare Act, where if the tribe wants to get involved in your case, a whole set of different laws are applied. And under ICWA, in my opinion, the Indian Child Welfare Act, it's harder for them to take your child or to keep your child away from you because of these special Indian laws. But you got to notify, you got to identify the tribe first, then you have to notify the tribe, then they have to get involved. So some people say, well, I have Indian ancestry, and it's true. But once, you know, the tribe is notified by the social worker, sometimes they don't want to get involved. And if you don't get involved, you don't get the full protection of the Indian Child Welfare Act. So, you know, it's true to that extent. But you should, I think, investigate and notify or identify first and then notify your tribes. By the way, the social worker has to notify your tribe, and it has to be done within a certain legal time period and method. So you want to make sure that when you notify the social worker that, hey, I have Indian ancestry, that you put it in an email so it's recorded and digitalized and saved forever. Because sometimes you might call the social worker and say, hey, I'm a member of the Navajo tribe in, you know, Arizona. And social worker says, Tanya never told me that. And you're, you know, the case has gone on for months. The case has gone on for months, and you don't get the protection of ICWA, and your tribe was never notified. You follow me?
Right. I do recall in the very beginning when I took my kids, I was so distraught. I totally didn't even think about it. And then, you know, once it progressed, and then actually my kids are no longer, you know, I don't have my rights anymore. So I'm thinking, as far as hoping anyway, once I can prove my Indian ancestry, that, you know, it will help me as far as fighting back to try to get my kids returned to me.
Right. I want to stress also one other thing, Tanya, that you work with your attorney. Because if your rights have been terminated and the Indian thing was never done the proper way, you may, and I want to say may, be able to set aside that termination and that adoption and make them start all over again. I'm not sure what the law is in Texas, but that's what happens in California. There was a case that I knew about up in the Ventura County where they went through the process of terminating the parents' rights. And it turned out that at the very first hearing, the judge asked, was there any American Indian ancestry? And both of the parents said yes, and they named some tribe in Alaska. And the county's attorney argued that that wasn't an Indian tribe pursuant to the Indian Child Welfare Act. I don't know why. Uh-huh. I don't know why she thought she could argue that, but that ended up being false, and they had to start the case all over again, which significantly helped the parents, because by that time the parents had done everything and had solved all the problems with respect to what brought them to the juvenile court in the first place. So as I recall, the parents ended up getting the children back. Because, you know, the case had to be started all over again. Hey, Tanya, I want to thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. And in a few weeks, call us back and give us an update on your case there in Texas, okay?
Yeah, can I hold on for another question if you don't mind me asking?
No, Tanya, I'm so sorry because we have a board full of people calling in from all over the United States, and we have to get to them, okay? All right. Thank you, Tanya.